a legal ID. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Dr. Demento, just barely legal.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, or KBOO.fm, where we make musical structures for the listener to enjoy.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is Dirt Bag.
It's alarming how charming it is to be a farming. Isn't that right?
Pretty darn nice, actually. Yep, I love it.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. This is The Dirt Bag, a garden variety show. Along with me here today, as is the case most every second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock, Jim Gilbert.
Morning, Glenn.
Coming in from
Liberal,
south of town a bit.
Yep, the large, incredible conservative community of Liberal.
Yes. I looked on the map one time, and where you live is almost exactly due south of where I live.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Yeah, just that's the way it is. So our latitude is the same.
Our longitude
is the same. Yep. South, yes, yep. North-south.
Yep. Our latitude would be slightly different.
Yes, I probably have a slightly later sunset now than you do.
That's probably true, and we are so much warmer, of course, than you are. Not true, but...
Yeah. Warmer and colder.
Yeah.
Definitely. Anyway, we've got a full show today. As usual, I'll just give you a little rundown here. Let's see. Where are we going here? Oh, our plant of the month. Pole beans. We're going to talk about pole beans.
Boy.
Not just regular old green beans, but pole beans. And let's see here. Well, I've done this before, and I'm going to ask for our listener to call in and respond. Doesn't have to be long and lengthy, unless you want it to be that way. Of plants that you regret planting.
Oh.
And I have a couple that I'll talk about. And it's too bad, because otherwise they could be nice plants. But I'll tell you what about there. Also, summer pruning. It is time to talk about summer pruning, and this is the time. Generally, the ideal time is between mid-July and mid-August, but I've gone later, and I've started earlier sometimes. Also, I think this will be fun. We're going to talk about, or Jim's going to talk about mostly, how sunlight affects fruit production. And I'm going to talk about how, I just read this great study as far as beekeepers are concerned, is how, and this would be concerned, I mean, of interest to all plant growers, how they compared normal, above normal rainfall, below normal rainfall, and drought, how that affects nectar production. Because when you affect nectar production, you affect insect attractability, we'll say.
And you probably noticed on my email to Glenn about the how to make syrup from tart fruit.
Yes. We'll be talking about that. That's another of my line items here.
Very
and
interesting.
And let's see. Then, half past the hour, we have our garden stumper. The first person that calls in with the correct answer will receive a free hand gardening tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store at 42nd and Northeast Alberta Street. Then let's see, watering and how we harvest at peak. In other words, things that are blooming right now, producing right now, when should we harvest that in order to get its peak flavor and perhaps storability? And then, making syrup with tart fruit, and I'll also offer a way to make a real easy jam out of not necessarily tart fruit. we take sweet fruit and we make it sweeter. Isn't that what jam is, right?
Yeah.
And let's see, our dirtbag dictionary term will be deadheading. And if there's a document, a documentary update, we'll get that from Jim. Also, as what I'm trying to understand this month, I'm just going to follow up from last month, and we talked about, at least we mentioned, that what makes an acronym, I think it's misused often in either the printed word and also the spoken word, but an acronym, as we know, is a word that's pronounced from the initials of the words that make it up. For example, the one that I mentioned there was the National Oceanic Atmosphere, NOAA. We don't say N-O-A-A. We say NOAA.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't call the FBI FIBI. No, we don't. We just call it the FBI. And so I learned from online, at least that the FBI is called initialism. So the difference between initialism and an acronym is that you pronounce one and you don't pronounce the other. So I understand that now. How about that?
Interesting. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, if you have a question, a gardening question, please feel free to call us, 503-231-8187. And we also... that's the same number to call in to answer the gardening question. Speaking of which, I'll just mention right now that we didn't get any written answers to our stumper from last year, last month when I was gone. We were gone. Nobody wrote in. So I'll just give you the answer now. It was, what roses are to Portland as what flower is to Florence, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And the answer is rhododendron. They have a rhododendron festival there, and it's just 1 year younger than the Portland Rose Festival. It's been going a while.
Yeah. I lived in Florence, but I forgot that they did that.
Really? So. You've lived in a lot of places.
I was trying to start a boat building shop in Florence before I, and I had an epiphany there, Glenn, which is like, what am I doing here? sort of thing. Like, and that sort of began my journey toward starting a farm.
Towards Hood River.
Yep.
Or in the boonies of Hood River. Okay, we did have somebody, one of our apparently regular listeners, Lee, and he wrote in, had three questions for us. I'll just read these and then we'll deal with them. So, number one, my unripe purple plums are green. indicative of chlorophyll, he says? Are they photosynthesizing and putting those sugars directly into the fruit? And this says the same applies to other fruit, too. What do you think, Jim?
And because I have a bachelor's degree in Russian language, I asked my partner, Lorraine Gardner, who has a master's degree in horticulture, for her thoughts on that. And she said, yes, all of the processes in plant growth are connected to sunlight and photosynthesis. And that is true. So, yes, the answer that those fruits are ripening because of the sunshine.
Are they photosynthesizing and putting these sugars directly into the root? Okay, so his unripe purple plums are green, and so I'm wondering if that's the part of the question that he's more concerned about, or are they photosynthesizing and putting those sugars directly into the fruit? Say yes, so maybe that's
And you've seen the purple sunlight, right?
That's it. That alpenglow. That's where they get it.
That's right.
Okay. Then number two, potato flowers. Remove or let them be. I've never removed a potato flower, and I don't know what the controversy would be here. Maybe it's like removing tomato shoots or something, and they say that, well, then more energy will go into the fruit. I'm not buying that part. Mostly because I remember from what our colleague Ted Swenson used to say, what I learned from him is that the fruit is for next year is already being decided on now. So when we thin, you'll get bigger fruit, I think, by thinning in the current year. But I don't know about removing flowers. Would you get more bigger fruit, Jim? This is just another question. If you removed some of the pollinating flowers in the spring on an apple tree, for example, you just left the king fruit, that big one in the middle. What if you removed all the other ones before then?
That's interesting, isn't it? All I've ever heard is removing the immature fruit, never the flowers.
Yeah.
So, maybe you want to make sure that you're going to have the fruit before you start taking anything off.
I might try that next year, just on some of them.
Sure.
Just
on your potatoes.
No, the apples.
Oh, apples. Okay. Potatoes could be different because you're not. It's really, I don't know if a potato is really a fruit anyway, but if the flower is probably not much, has much connection with the formation of the tuber.
Right. It would, it would take some resources if a bee or an insect came and pollinated it. It would have to devote some resources to it. But I never do it, so I do what's easiest for me.
Yeah. As long as you get potatoes.
I always do.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, and finally here, number three, Camas gophers. Sometimes I looked this up a little bit and read a little bit. It's sometimes called the Camas pocket gopher, indigenous to the Willamette Valley and close by. He says, I live on rural property where these gophers also live. They just love to eat the roots of artichokes, carrots, potatoes, sweet potatoes, especially sweet potatoes, and others. Sometimes, if I am lucky, the traps I set get them, and the current digging and damage ends. However, over many years, successive generations of them have created an extensive network of tunnels beneath the garden that persist in these heavy clay soils. If I happen to plant something over one of these tunnels, the plant will be stunted if it grows at all. If a wandering gopher comes upon these vacant tunnels, for them it has to be like finding an empty furnished mansion. Any suggestions as how I might get rid of the tunnels, which can be at depths of 12 to 15 inches? I think driving his Humvee over his garden beds probably is out of the question.
Yeah, yes. A large,
just a collapse.
A large, you know, M51 tank would probably do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, of course, you would not only collapse the tunnel, but you crush your soil. That's the point of fertility, too. But,
yeah.
So if presumably this rural area has some space, the best thing I can think of is a subsoiler. Well, if you have a tractor, it's pretty easy to pull one. I have a single tooth subsoiler that we use, not so much for that purpose, but just for generally breaking up the subsoil.
So you have to explain what the subsoiler is.
Yeah, well, a subsoiler is a pretty simple tool that has it's a long tooth, so to speak, for a 3-point hitch, and it goes down into the soil 18 to 24 inches,
wow,
typically.
And that'd do it.
It does the job. And if you have a lot of room or a neighbor with a larger tractor and you can pull a 3-point subsoiler, you can do a bigger area much faster.
Yeah.
But that would be my first suggestion. The second suggestion would be a plow, also a deep plow, because my guess is you'd probably get down deep enough at least to break at least the surface, the top of the tunnel, and get some soil in there and mix it up. There are two thoughts that I have for if you have the room to do that. If it's like a backyard where you can't get machinery into it, then it's probably going to have to be a hand process with some kind of.
Well, they do make. I've forgotten what it's called now, but when double digging was kind of part of the rage 20, 30 years ago, where you would take a shovel length depth of soil and put it aside, and then you would stick this very strong, maybe 8 to 10 inches, maybe 4 spikes that you might have to jump on to get it into the ground, and then then you rock it back.
Mm-hmm.
You're not pulling up soil, you're just breaking it up, kind of like your subsoiler.
Yeah,
but I've forgotten what they call these things, but I think you can rent them at many garden stores.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even Coley Farm Store.
Yeah.
But your observation there is that if it was a smaller lot, then it's probably going to be hand.
Yeah, yeah. We discovered recently a fairly effective way of dealing with the gophers on our place, which probably are the same kind. I could call them liberal gophers, but they're probably camas gophers. And the Wilco Farm Store now sells a sulfur, kind of like a sulfur firecracker almost, you could call it. You light it and you can put it in the hole, if especially if you know you can identify an active area, and it will work.
Huh.
To make the gopher very unhappy and probably no longer alive.
Okay. Well, Lee, we hope that helps. We're not definitive answers on most of what we say, but we do have, do we have 100 years experience growing between us, Jim? We probably do.
Probably so, yeah, pretty close. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
The century man.
Never thought of that, Glenn.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I'll talk about pole beans, and then we'll come back. Our music theme this month has to do with where I was last month. This is the reason that we had to record it early, is because I was off on adventure in New York City, Manhattan, almost exclusively.
Wow.
And so I have 3 songs that deal with New York City. It was just great. Just
cool.
Really thoroughly enjoyed it. So
great.
So our first tune is by Lenny Kravitz, and I looked up the lyrics on it, and the tune is called New York City, and he just apparently he's from there and just really loves the place, and regardless of ups and downs of New York City. So this is Lenny Kravitz. Nope, that's the wrong one there. You want to pause that there, Ty? Yeah, the next one too is also called New York City. We could go with that one. That's John Lennon. I have a story to go about that too, of course. Are you gonna get the other one there? Well, let me know when you get that ready, Ty, and I'll start talking about pole beans, our plant of the month. I've talked about beans in the past, but I want to specifically talk about pole beans because... Oh, there we go. Lenny Kravitz. Yeah, New York City. Yeah, it was just great seeing all the landmarks that I've heard about all my life, and
yeah,
now they make sense.
It's a lot of people there.
Yep. Not as many cars though with the congestion pricing.
Yeah, I wondered. Well, I stood on a street corner one time on 42nd Street or something like that. It was a friend. We were going to a bank, and I was just standing there, and in Portland or where I live or wherever I live, but I can kind of say hi to people as they walk by or nod or something. Impossible. It was like a sea of humanity. I'd never experienced that before.
Just like in the movies.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll just continue here then on the plant of the month, pole beans. It's a great bang for your buck, pole beans, or other pole peas rather than bush. You know, it takes a little extra work because you do have to build a trellis, but it doesn't have to be fancy. Just could be something you just pound into the ground and let the tendrils curl around them. But you just get a lot more fruit or produce, and it lasts for a longer season. So as long as you keep picking, they'll almost keep producing. You know, in the fall, I'm still sometimes having green beans in October. But I do like to let them at some point start forming seed pods because I save them then. Mm-hmm. I grow Blue Lake beans. That's what I grew up picking and also eating, and still my favorite. And I've been having... bought Blue Lake's blue seeds in I don't know how many years. Just keep saving them and shelling them.
Nice. That's cool.
It doesn't take much, you know, too many. So that's what I like, Blue Lake pole beans. Of course, everybody's taste is different, so. Let's move on here. Plants you regret planting. You know, if you want to just give a quick call and say, man, I wish I hadn't planted this, 503-231-8187. I'll give you one of them, the one that I'm dealing with now particularly, and I kind of even hate to say it, is milkweed. It's a great plant, of course, for the monarch butterfly larvae. In fact, that's the only thing that the larva will eat. And so, you know, there's a concerted effort to have that planted. And I haven't seen any monarch butterflies, but the honeybees just love it, and other bees too. And ants. It must be full of nectar. but it is 30 feet away from where I first planted it. And it puts out a multitude of seeds, and it might also spread underground, too. But I regret doing that.
Well, that's funny, because I was thinking, is there anything that I can say I regret planting? And yes, Empress of China tree.
Yeah, well, that's known. Isn't that a known?
Well,
I didn't know. Oh, okay, you didn't know it at the time.
It may have been known, but not by
and
me.
And maybe not then.
Yeah. Difficult. Very aggressive root system, and just.
Yeah.
But what a nice name.
It fooled people like the butterfly bush. Right. And the other one that I'll mention is yellow alstroemeria, or Peruvian lily. For years, I had grown the pink-purple variety, and very behaved, never went beyond 4 or 5 feet. And the yellow has kind of crowded out the purple and just spreads. Not as much as the milkweed, I might say. I mean, maybe milkweed should have given me a hint, but another plant that has weed in the name, Joe Pye weed, is not weedy at all. I'm not sure why it's called that, but it's a great bee plant also. So anyway, I'm just pulling these things up as they sprout up.
But. Yeah.
So those are two. If anybody else wants to chime in, please give me a call, or us a call. Let's see, what else here? Oh, a little bit of summer pruning. And this is mostly for pears and apples. We've established that the best time to prune stone fruit, peaches, nectarines, plums, apricots, if you have them, I suppose, is when, Jim? Late spring?
Well, actually, we like to prune them in like August.
August, okay.
Yeah.
Good timing then for that, too, because it's a question of disease.
Yep. That's the primary reason we do it then. Yep.
For pears and apples, it's to control the size of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
If the tree is the size that you want, I would definitely recommend looking into summer pruning. Just keep it the way it is. You're essentially, all you're doing is cutting off the new growth. And another way to think about what you prune off in the summer in apples and pears is what you can do with your hand clippers. In other words, you're not doing structural changes. You're not chainsawing, for the most part, branches off. That should probably be done when it's dormant, if you're chainsawing.
Yeah. And if you're chainsawing, I love my battery-powered chainsaw.
Yes. Yeah. And so with summer pruning, you're not doing any heading cuts. You're only doing thinning cuts. That is, you're taking it back to a crotch or a growth spurt. The easiest way to do it is you're just cutting off any new growth. Think of it that way. And then you might prune off a little bit more too. But it's better conditions, weather conditions, certainly. You don't have to worry about the weather or the rain spreading disease or anything like that. So it's what I do and what I will do and have been doing for 30 years probably.
Well,
30 of those 100 years of our experience.
Yeah, that's right. Good.
Okay. Well, let us, after our garden stumper break, we will talk about sunlight and rainfall. How's that?
Okay.
You ready, Ty, for our stumper? Yeah, I think so. Let's see. It's coming. Good news. All right, Jim.
Okay. So this is a somewhat unusual question, and I can explain later why I say that. But I thought I would try something, because figs are so I got to make a quick comment beginning. This is a question about figs, and I just discovered a variety that's fairly new to us. That is ripening. I picked some fruit off of it on July 2nd, That's a 3 weeks, way, at least 3 weeks before any other fig, the Brava crop, the first crop, has ripened for us. It's remarkable. I was like so excited. I couldn't believe it. And I actually did a little bit of research on the variety, and it may be one that will start growing and offering, because it was very good. The figs were large, sweet.
What color?
They're green on the outside and light red on the inside.
So similar to Desert King in that respect.
Similar, yeah. And Desert King will ripen soon, fairly soon, but all of my other Brava crop figs, including Desert King, are still hard.
Mine ripen up a little bit before you would out there, but generally by third week in July.
Yeah. These guys would probably be ripening in late June for you. Which is
That'd be something.
Remarkable. So
anyway,
back to the stumper. So what color are fig flowers?
Uh-huh. Okay. What color are fig flowers? If you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. And the first person with the correct answer will get a sharpening of a garden hand tool. So pruners, loppers, shears, shovels. Hose. You got it. That's also the number to call if you have a question, 503-231-8187. All right, well, let's delve into sunlight and fruit production first.
Pretty important.
Okay, well, then now let's move on.
I can't tell you. I mean, I've had numerous people over the years, you know, tell me, well, I have this wonderful plant, you know, and it's very healthy looking and growing well and all that, but I never get any fruit, you know. So my first question is, do you get flowers? Well, I'm not so sure about that, you know, and maybe sometimes they might have flowers, and I say, well, and what's your light exposure? Well, it's in the shade of this big fir tree or on the north side of my house and against the wall. And, you know, that's just not the place to plant a tree that you want to get fruit from, or a berry or any fruiting plant.
Before you go on here, let me just bring up the notion that light and sunlight are two different things. Is that not correct?
You're talking about yes.
I mean, for as far as a plant is concerned.
Sunlight would be direct sun landing on the plant.
Right.
Light would just be daytime versus nighttime.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're talking sunlight here.
Yes, yes.
Right. So when you ask, you know, well, how much light does it get?
Yep.
Sunlight. Okay. So that's what, okay.
Yep.
Go on.
Well, and so that is, as I said, very, very important. Generally speaking, there are a few exceptions. There are some plants, like Arctic Beauty Kiwi, for example, that like to have some shade and do well in that kind of environment. But generally speaking, a half-day sun, I always kind of figure, is kind of the minimum for growing typical fruits. You know, if you have less than half-day sun, you might want to find another spot or do some removal of what you don't want or something, you know.
Okay, and so what is the importance of having direct sunlight on the fruit itself as opposed to just leaves? I mean, if you were to bag an apple, you know, for pest control.
Well, in my experience, the coloration typically of the fruit is different when it has the direct sunlight. It can in some cases be a problem too. You know, you can get burned. I mean, super hot weather. I know a lot of it. I suppose one example in my experience would be kiwi, especially the hardy kiwi. A lot of the fruit is underneath the foliage, and it's totally fine.
It's fine,
but it won't typically have the red blush that the fruit will have if it's out, if it's where it's getting the direct sunlight on it.
I've seen where, you know, it's a particularly compact apple tree and a leaf is just always over a portion of the fruit. And when I pick the fruit, I move the leaf, I see that the coloration difference, you know, it's red where there's no leaves.
Right.
Right. And when we bag an apple to protect it from several pests, we say to take the bag off when the danger of the pest is gone, which is generally end of August, and then it'll color up. And that's what I do.
Uh-huh. What kind of a bag are you talking about?
A sandwich bag,
uh-huh.
A craft bag.
Just uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's opaque. Yeah. It lets yeah. light through, but not sunlight through.
Uh-huh. Like a white bag.
Well, I use, you know, like a sandwich bag or a...
Brown?
Brown bag, yeah.
Got it, okay.
Yeah, that's yeah. the color,
uh-huh.
right. Jim, we have a call. Francesca!
Hey, I think I have an answer. Aren't the flowers within the fig itself?
Yes, they are.
You win the prize. That's a, it, I didn't want to say it was a trick yeah. question, but it's an unusual question because we cannot see the flowers. And
awesome.
So that was very good. Yeah, that is very true. The fig is a very unusual fruit that way. I don't know of any other that I can think of that has, at least not a normal fruit, maybe tropical ones, but that have flowers that are totally invisible to the eye.
They might have a color, but that was the trick part.
I'm sure they will have a color, but what it is, I have no idea.
When would be a good time to prune figs?
Well, it depends. I do my pruning. Most of the pruning I do is in winter, and there's a couple of different reasons why the type of pruning you would do it could be different. If you have a desert king fig, which is one of the best ones for our climate, it's a San Pedro type fig, and it only bears the first crop on the old wood, it's called the Breva crop. So if you prune all of the old wood off, you won't get any figs.
Okay. Because I have a relatively new, I think it is a Desert King or something similar, that, you know, it's gotten very leggy and sprawly and no fruit really yet. It's been in the ground like 2 or 3 years. But
is it in sunlight?
Yeah. it is.
Okay, good.
Is it growing well? Is it happy?
Yeah, it is. I'm just not seeing much sign of any, fruit or whatever growth with it.
Yeah. Yeah, 4 years old. That's
you should have.
Yeah.
I think 3 years, maybe at the most, actually. So.
How big was it?
Still, it's in an outdoor container, like a brick container thing. So it's like, you know, sprawled about 3 or 4 feet and about 2 feet high, but I just, yeah, it's getting rambunctious or something.
Well, here's how I approach my Desert King. I'm in the city.
Uh-huh.
And I prune it in February, generally, and I'm using a chainsaw on that because it's so big.
Right.
And I want to keep it low. And what I've determined through the years is that the wood that the figs will be on is new growth from the spring. So if you were to plant, if you were to prune, say for example, this time of year, it would send out some new growth, but that's not it would not produce fruit next year. So I guess what I'm recommending is don't prune it now.
Okay.
I would wait until February. Or, you know, in the winter, it could be earlier than that, too.
Okay. What about walnuts? Like, walnut trees, when's the optimal time? I have a lot of dead wood, but they produce, it's an old, you know, English walnut. You do that in the winter as well?
Dormant pruning, I think, would
yeah.
be the best time. Yeah, when the tree's lost its leaves, you can see, the wood you want to remove easily and...
I doubt you could kill an English walnut.
No.
I mean, regardless of when you pruned it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if going back to your fig for just a moment, I mean, Desert King is the most vigorous fig that I know of, and so it grows it grows fast and it produces a lot of figs once it gets going. And Glenn's point is really a good one, but I like to prune some of the lower, very bottom branches off, depending upon how low they are, and keep it upright. But you're going to get the figs on that wood that grew this past year.
So what that means is that if you don't prune it, your tree just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's always at the ends. And so you have a lot of unproductive wood. And so it's better just to prune it off every year. Not all of the stuff, okay. but mine produces way more than I use.
Yeah, the tricky thing with Desert King is you can't, you want to prune it to keep it so it's not getting so tall, for a tree like yours, I would prune half of the old wood off and leave half for the fruit for next year, for example.
Yeah, right. And it might have something to do with it being in the planter, too.
Yep.
Yeah. What about with cherries? Because we have they're fruiting like crazy this one this year, and then I have a little Rainier cherry to be buddy partner to pollinate. It's about 100 feet away. What about cherry pruning, same just during dormancy, or
cherries are.
Once they've borne fruit, and they're early compared to other stone fruits, we were talking earlier, like August would be a good time for pruning, because it's going to be late enough that you won't stimulate new growth, but it's also still during warm, dry weather, so the wounds will heal and you won't have much less likely to have any disease issues connected to the pruning.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
You bet. If you're interested in the tool sharpening, stay on the line, and Ty will get your contact information.
Thanks for your answer.
Great. Thanks. Okay, Ty, do we have another call? No? Okay. So back to sunlight. So we've established that you need at least 50, half days of sunlight. More is better.
Yep.
Probably full is best for most, but there are exceptions, such as the Arctic kiwi.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I'll just mention here briefly, and then we'll get into our maybe our next musical break. And that is a study that, as a beekeeper, I get lots of emails or results of studies and whatnot sent by the bee journals. And this one was out of Brazil, and it was a controlled study having to do with a squash variety, zucchini even, I think it was. And so it was controlled, and it was very, of course, elaborate, and I didn't grasp everything that they were talking about with my first reading. But they had a control, normal rainfall, above normal rainfall, the control was the normal rainfall, and then above, below, and drought. And that's, in other words, no rainfall. And just astounding, and kind of what I intuited, but not exactly what I intuited, in that with the drought, I've always wondered, well, how does a plant respond to the amount of nectar that it produces in a drought or a low rainfall situation? And with the drought, and I thought, my hypothesis would have been that, well, maybe it was the same amount of nutrients in the nectar, but it was just diluted because there wasn't as much water, so the nectar was thicker, if you get my drift. And according to this study, with the zucchini in Brazil, the drought, there was virtually no nectar. And with the low rainfall, it was not nearly as much as even the normal, of course. And the over rainfall was the best. which is, you know, so I actually started watering some of my plants, you know, a little bit more. For example, the dahlias, I'm just not letting them dry out as much, just because I like seeing the bees visit the flowers, but maybe it'll help their survival and whatnot too.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have a feeling that's probably a little different with tree fruits. When you mentioned nectar, you're talking about the sweet.
Yes, the
juice.
Nectar and the flowers.
And the flower, but how about the fruit, the actual fruit itself?
No, they weren't measuring that.
Oh, I see.
It was just it was just for pollinators.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's
but it would be interesting to know. Well, how does the fruit react in a drought situation? Say we have great rain in April and then nothing. Then what happens? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've traveled in places where they don't have summer rain at all, in very dry climates like Uzbekistan, Sicily, and they grow things there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, you know, even with vegetables, they have dry land farming, you know, for potatoes. They space them further apart. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the productivity is a lot less in those
situations. Yeah, but the inputs are too. So,
yeah.
You got to, if you're making a living at it, you got to look at all the inputs that it takes.
Yeah, that's true.
And you have to have more land. But if you don't have the rain or the irrigation system, then you have to do something else. All right. Looks like it's Ty. Ty, are you ready to do this? No, he's still on the phone. So we'll go on here. Let's see here. Okay, let's talk about harvesting at its peak. What's coming on now that you need to... There's a lot of things growing now, but how do we know, for example, you have these currants?
Yeah.
How do we know that it's the best time? Because currants don't ripen off the vine, do they?
Nope.
So how do you know?
Well, yeah, good question. So we were kind of learning a little bit again this year, but mainly with like currants and blueberries when they come off easily, that's one really important clue. Mm-hmm. If you have to yank on something,
right,
it means it wants to stay there longer and ripen.
Just so, because it's colored like a currant or a blueberry doesn't mean it's ripe.
That's right. That's correct. And also, at least in the case of most of these kind of berries that we're ripening right now, the texture of the berry, if it's like hard as a rock, probably not ripe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's usually there's some softness to it. And you know, if you have more than a couple of them, taste one. and you'll find out pretty quickly, you know, whether it's any worth eating or not.
And just realize that, and we've made lists before. I don't think we haven't posted anywhere, but what ripens on the vine and off.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that ripen. It's more than ripen off the vine. No, the other way around. More of them you have to leave on for them to ripen.
Yes.
Fully.
Yes, that's true. And you know, and the interesting thing about the word ripe being ripe, you know, like say with a Bartlett pear, it's in theory, it's ripe when you pick it firm, because that's when you want to pick it. You don't want it to fall off the tree soft.
That's right.
But then it's not really ready to eat.
And so it continues to ripen.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, and I have to mention figs just because they're coming soon. And anybody that has a fig tree, you know, it's really important to let that fig droop.
Yeah.
And be soft to the touch, which is a wonderful thing for eating. It's a real drag if you're a commercial fig grower because, you know, how do you ship the darn thing when it's like that? And that's a problem. And so when we buy figs in the store, typically around here, they're from California. And, you know, they're okay, but they're not ripe.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
It's my taste.
I always remember my dad saying that a blackberry is red when it's green. Green meaning unripe.
Ah, right. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. And so the things that are ripening right now, I mean, cherries just kind of finished up. I mean, we had a pretty good, darn good cherry crop. And I just a couple of days ago was in the Dalles where we have a project going, and we brought home probably 15 pounds of cherries we picked off the tree there, Rainier. Oh, God, they're so good. Oh.
Yeah. And so cherries don't ripen off the tree. So you have to let them go.
Yep. And if you have cherries and you want to keep them, stick them in the fridge so they'll hang on for quite a while.
Right. I don't know about watermelons. Do they? They must not ripen off the...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. I've never grown... Well, I guess I've tried that. So.
That's an interesting question. What fruits ripen off the tree? I have to think about that for a minute.
Well, peaches.
Peaches, yeah.
But any of the small fruits, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries... Blackberries? No.
No. Pears?
Not apples.
Not apples? No.
It's a small list as we're determining right here, and have in the past, but I can't remember.
That's right. Well, any listeners out there who would like to add to this list, you could write us or call us. And
that's right.
We always look forward to that.
Okay. Ty, we'll now go to our second musical break, and this is a very short, under a minute. This is a home recording of John Lennon, who we also visited the not only the Dakota, where he was shot dead, but right across the street is, kind of across the street is Central Park. And there's a memorial to him that Yoko funded. And she also funded some art in the nearest subway station, kind of clouds and which was that his Imagine LP or something like that? But... And words of inspiration there, too. So she did quite a bit. She no longer lives there in the Dakota, but it was a rather solemn and meaningful visit. There, they call it Strawberry Fields, which is just a little memorial. And one of our guides said, there's somebody almost always performing there. And sure enough, somebody was
really?
Performing there. Yeah. And I'll probably always remember they were doing his rendition of Julia.
Yeah, it makes me sad to think about that.
Yeah. So anyway, this is a song. Apparently, he has a regular song from one of his albums from 1972 that was recorded in Madison Square Garden, also in Manhattan. But anyway, it's just called New York City. That is it.
Wow.
Home recording, John Lennon.
Pretty cool.
Okay, well, let's see here. Let's make some syrup.
This is a really interesting story, Glenn. So we just had visitors from South Korea. They just flew home today. And on one of our journeys to that part of the world, several years ago, we went to a festival for a berry that they grow there. We call it Shizandra. They call it Omija. It's in Russian, the name is limonik, which means like little lemon. It's a tart fruit, a tart berry, very nutritious. They have quite a little industry in Korea growing this, even an experiment station, and they do a lot of stuff with it. Well, anyway, I don't know of any other country in the world that has an Omija festival. And we went there, and what people do with the berries is they make syrup. And the process they use is they take the berries when they're ripe on the vine, which is September typically, and they put the berries in a container, half and half by weight, with sugar, and layered. And the berries, you don't have to take the berry. The berries can be in clusters. You don't need to like take each individual berry off the cluster. Just put it in there is a layer of berries, a layer of sugar, a layer of berries, a layer of sugar. No heating involved. No other processing involved. You put it in this in a glass jar, glass container, and it's sits for about 3 months in a cool place. We actually put it in a refrigerator or a cooler, but it will work in a cool spot too. And there's a physical process that occurs. The sugar takes the juice out of the berries, and what you end up with is syrup.
So you eventually strain it then after 3 months.
Yes, of course. Then you pour the juice, the syrup, out of the jar, and you can store it in refrigerator. It's a good idea in a bottle. It makes the most wonderful drink, like Italian soda. Put just a little bit in the bottom of a glass. Add some sparkling mineral water. Mm-hmm. Stir it a bit. Oh, it's so darn good.
What color is it? Does it end up being?
It's red. The berry is red, and the syrup is red. And not only do they make the syrup out of omija or schizandra vine berries, they also make it with flowering quince, chinomales, japonica, another tart fruit that you really can't, eat in any other way. I mean, you can make preserves out of it, but you can't. It's too tart to eat fresh. And also Prunus mume, or flowering apricot, which I just started the process of making. I have three jars of to-be syrup with Prunus mume, which is ripe now. So, So it's a fascinating process, and I for a couple of reasons. One is I like it. My guess is all the vitamins are going to be that are in the juice are going to be there.
I think so.
There's no heating involved. And it's so darn good.
Running out of time, so I'll just mention, too, somebody, one of my honey customers, gave me a jar of, I don't know what she called it, raspberry. It wasn't syrup, but it's not jam either. It's essentially the same operation as what you said, just equal amounts of fruit and sugar. And, of course, with this, you do mix it, and that's it.
Yeah,
I mean, you want the sugar to dissolve, which
yes.
it will, and then I freeze it, and it's not nearly as thick, of course, as jam that uses pectin or whatever, but it's so darn easy.
And we tried making it with regular quince. It didn't turn out so well because it wasn't tart enough, the fruit. I mean, it seemed like at least to get the kind of syrup we wanted to make it with. They make it with tart fruit in South Korea, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating process, and, if any listeners want to try it, I'd be happy to talk more about it on the next show, too. But right now, the Prunus mume or flowering apricot are ripe. The chinomales will be ripe in September into October, as will schizandra, if any listeners have that berry growing.
You can experiment with whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to, we can make jam out of sweeter things and syrup out of tartar things. All right, Jim, we're out of time.
Oh, darn, Glenn.
Yep. Time flies by here, but we'll be back live in August. I'll be in town. And we didn't get to deadheading, but that's just taking off the old flowers.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
And if anybody wants to go to www.anoregonstory.com, they can watch a very, very cool movie, a long one or a short one, about Oregon and how we have became such a great state with all of our farmland.
Have you got the school version ready to go?
We're not yet, but we're working on it.
Soon. All right. This is Glenn Andreessen, Jim Gilbert. Thanks a lot, Ty, for coming in once again and helping us out.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 12 o'clock noon.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.